So in 2005, my wife and I walked into a Unitarian Universalist church for the first time. And I had not been part of any church community before because I was raised unchurched. And there was a lot of basic church-going stuff that I had to pick up. You know, it's like, what do you wear, and how early do you show up, and how do you avoid getting assigned to committees? But because I like to sing, and because I can read music, the hymnal was very important to me. Everyone else may have known Blue Boat Home by heart, but I could read the music and keep up. So the hymnal was very dear to me, and I paid a lot of attention to what music occurred in the service. And then one day, we sang the hymn that we sang at the beginning of today's service. Once to every soul and nation comes the moment to decide, in the strife of truth with falsehood, for the good or evil side. And this seems so different from anything else in our hymnal. Our hymnals are full of songs about peace and about reaching out, like Building Bridges, the song that you just learned. And we've got hymns that ask, when will the fighting cease? And hymns about forgiving one another and beginning again in love. We've got hymns that pray that we might be instruments of God's peace. We have songs that tell us that while we may love our homes, other people in other lands love their homes just as much. And even our protest songs highlight our gentleness. We are a gentle, angry people. But once to every soul and nation is not like that. I mean, I don't know if you could hear the military rhythm to it. It was dun 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 dun. And the words, the hymn says, there is good and there is evil, and you have to decide now which side you are on. And by the way, says the hymn, a lot of people have chosen the evil side. A lot of people in power have chosen the evil side. And if you fight for good, you might die. I have to say that sentiment and those words have taken on more meaning for me now than they did in 2005. More meaning over the years as I've become more aware of oppressions that have been with us always. More meaning since the presidential election. More meaning since last year. More meaning since last week. Once to every soul and nation comes the moment to decide. Our government instituted a policy of separating asylum seekers from their children, of sending the children thousands of miles from their parents to camps where they sleep in cages, of putting children through a heartless process where, through bureaucratic carelessness, they may end up being separated from their parents forever. I've been to the Manzanar internment camps. If you ever get a chance to head up the 395 to the Eastern Sierras, I really recommend that you stop to visit them. The National Park Service has it set up so that you could see what it was like for the Japanese American families that were kept there by force. And they have a nice display that includes the words that President Ronald Reagan, of all people, said when he signed the bill in 1988 that provided reparations to the remaining surviving internees. For here we admit a wrong, he said, 40 years after the camps were closed. Here we reaffirm our commitment as a nation to equal justice under law. Separating children from their parents is just one of so many issues of social justice that are calling out now for our attention. And once to every soul and nation comes the moment to decide. This Wednesday will be the 4th of July, and the anniversary of the Declaration of Independence seems like a fitting time to consider the idea of patriotism. What does it mean to support our country? Does it mean that we support what our government is doing, or does it mean that we provide incentive for the government to do what it should do? And how do we respond as Unitarian Universalists when our government is not living up to its own principles? So this hymnal gives us hints as to how Unitarians and Universalists in the past have responded. And when words in our hymnal seem so relevant to what is going on today, I ask myself, where did these words come from? Who wrote them, and what was the issue that they were facing that made them write something that still makes sense today? And for once to every soul and nation, the time was 1845, and the issue was slavery. The 1840s were a contentious time in the United States. For years, there had been arguments about whether and how to annex the Republic of Texas and make it a state. And slavery was legal in Texas at the time, so if Texas became a state, the pro-slavery faction in Congress would get more power. At the very end of 1845, Texas was formally admitted into the United States, and the resulting border dispute with Mexico led to 2 years of war. And in the midst of this controversy and this argument over slavery and the war with Mexico, James Russell Lowell wrote a poem that appeared in the Boston Courier. He was a young man, the son of a Unitarian minister, and he was an active abolitionist. His poem, the poem that appeared in the newspaper, was pretty long. It was 18 verses of 5 lines each, and it was written in the kind of florid 19th century style. But the gist of it is this. He begins by saying that when an action is taken to support freedom, that action is felt around the world by everyone, because we are all connected in spirit. And likewise, evil actions are also felt all around the world. Lowell says that once to every man and nation, there comes a time to choose between good and evil, and he asks his countrymen, "Have you chosen?" He writes that when you look back over history, it is easy to see what the important issues were. And with hindsight, you can recognize those critical moments in history. But when you're in the middle of events, it's a lot harder to tell that you are in a period of crisis. But Lowell tells us, though, that we can tell if we are in such a moment. He says that if we listen to our souls, if we listen to our consciences, that we can tell. And he tells his readers in 1845 that their souls, that their consciences should tell them that slavery was such an issue and that it must be abolished. And at the end of the poem, he says that instead of glorifying the freedom fighters of the past, instead we should carry their spirit forward and fight for freedom ourselves. That was 1845. And all of those ideas are still completely relevant for us today. This poem was reprinted a few times right after it appeared, but it wasn't until about 1880 that three Unitarian ministers adapted stanzas from the poem and put it in a hymnal that was used mostly by Unitarians in the Midwest. The song was picked up by Anglicans a few years later, and over the course of the 20th century, it appeared in the hymnals of many denominations. The editors of our gray hymnal edited the words a little bit, I think, almost certainly in response to the strong strain of humanism that occurred in Unitarian Universalism in the mid-century. So they edited things to remove some references to God. And I'm a humanist myself, but I do regret the changes they made to the final verse of the song. Originally, the final verse went something like this. Though the cause of evil prosper, yet 'tis truth alone is strong. Though her portion be the scaffold, and upon the throne be wrong. Yet that scaffold sways the future, and behind the dim unknown, God is standing in the shadow, keeping watch above his own. Yet that scaffold sways the future. That is an incredibly powerful line. Stand up for what is right, says the hymn. You may die for your beliefs, but God will see that it is not in vain. So, we have this powerful hymn that tells us to choose sides, to fight injustice, to not give an inch. And then we have the hymn that we sang just before the service. Building bridges between our divisions, I reach out to you, will you reach out to me? With all of our voices and all of our visions, friends, we could make such sweet harmony. That song came from the early years of the Greenham Common Women's Peace Camp, an anti-war protest in England that lasted nearly two decades. It started in 1981 when the British government agreed to house cruise missiles at the Greenham Common Air Force Base. In May 1982, 250 women blockaded the base. By December 1982, 30,000 women joined hands and encircled the base. In 1983, 70,000 people made a human chain going from the Air Force Base to an ordnance factory. And in between these major events, protesters camped out around the perimeter of the base, and their peaceful protests inspired similar camps all across Europe. So the song Building Bridges also recognizes the division between right and wrong, but instead of suggesting violent conflict, it speaks of a different way of making change, by reaching out to people you disagree with. So how do we decide, as individuals and as a community, as a church community, which approach to take? When we are taking a stand against evil, do we embrace conflict, knowing that we are fighting for good? Or do we build bridges and hope to change people's minds? The conflict approach of Once to Every Soul and Nation gives you a very clear sense of purpose. You know what you stand for, and you know that you will not compromise. This clarity can get people off of their couches and onto the streets, as they were yesterday. But it has some weaknesses too. If your side accepts no compromises, and the other side accepts no compromises, then you'll either have a stalemate or a fight. But it's easy to underestimate the cost of the fight and to overestimate the extent of the eventual victory. So let me tell you about one person who learned how costly victory can be. It was Julia Ward Howe. Many people know the first verse of the Battle Hymn of the Republic, "Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord." But the other verses are not as well known. And nowadays, the fifth verse of the song contains an image that is so powerful that almost no one sings it today. Or if they do, they skip that verse or change the words. The fifth verse of the Battle Hymn of the Republic that she wrote down in the middle of the night in 1861. In the beauty of the lilies, Christ was born across the sea with a glory in his bosom that transfigures you and me. As he died to make men holy, let us die to make men free while God is marching on. As he died to make men holy, let us die to make men free. In 1861, that was not a metaphor. Soldiers were singing those words as they entered into battle. But in 1870, just 9 years after she wrote those words, encouraging men to go to war, Julia Ward Howe wrote something else, something completely opposed to war. In her Mother's Day proclamation, she wrote, "Arise, all women who have hearts, say firmly, our husbands shall not come to us reeking with carnage for caresses and applause. Our sons shall not be taken from us to unlearn all that we have been able to teach them of charity, mercy, and patience. From the bosom of the devastated earth, a voice goes up with our own. It says, disarm. Disarm." What happened in the 9 years between as he died to make men holy, let us die to make men free, and disarm? What made her change her mind? Well, for one thing, over 1 million people were killed in the Civil War, more Americans than have been killed in all of our other wars combined. 1 million people. And that's not to say that the war wasn't worth fighting, because slavery was definitely an issue that had to be dealt with. It had to be abolished. But it's just to say that the wars that we wage for good causes can end up costing more than we can imagine. So Julia Ward Howe may have come to believe that direct conflict is not always the best approach. But what are some of the problems with this building bridges approach? What happens when we work within an existing system and try to compromise? So one strength of this is that progress can come regularly, even though it might come slowly. There's possibility of reconciliation between opposing sides. People on both sides can learn to trust one another. They can find common ground and then work outward from that common ground to find wider agreement. This can work, especially in communities, like church communities, that are based on covenant. When we trust one another, we can overcome differences peacefully and with honor. But when we are not in covenant with those we disagree with, the building bridges approach can cause great harm. There are issues of human rights for which compromise is just not acceptable. And as a practical matter, compromise only works if both sides are willing to engage in it. But I think the most treacherous problem is this. A commitment to working within a system can lead to complacency. We can become so entrenched in the system that we do not see how broken it is. So, different situations call for different responses. Sometimes we will build bridges, sometimes we will engage in conflict. But either way, we do need to take sides. More and more people in the United States are finally paying attention to the racism, to the white supremacy, to the systematic oppressions that have always been with us. More and more of us are feeling the call to action in Lowell's words. Once to every soul and nation comes the moment to decide in the strife of truth with falsehood for the good or evil side. I hope that those old words will call you to action thoughtfully, responsibly, powerfully as Unitarian Universalists. May it be so. Blessed be.